You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Well, the Dallas Cowboys did get something done with Dak Prescott. I'm not sure it's exactly what we thought they were going to get done with Dak Prescott. Guess it helps a little bit with that cap situation. Amber and Ian presented by Progressive Insurance. You can find him, Ian Fitzsimmons, at Ian Fitz ESPN. You can find me, Amber Wilson, at Amber W Sports. So let's bring in the man who helped break that Dak Prescott story, Field Yates, ESPN NFL Insider, First Draft Podcast, Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. Field, please stop adding stuff to your resume. It makes introducing you really obnoxious.
I'll do my best, Amber, but no promises there. Well, let's talk about the Dak Prescott here thing for a second. And Fitz, good evening to you as well, my friend. I think the most important thing that I can do is throw a disclaimer out there to everybody who is listening and say it's time to get nerdy, because this is what this is all about. What Dak Prescott did in the short term is create $4 million in salary cap space for the Cowboys. And people are probably saying to themselves, in NFL terms, that's not that much money. And they are correct. But as part of this restructured contract, this was something that Dak had to agree to. There were a couple of things that for 2024 do not matter, but that Dak and his representation had to sign off on. Why is that important? Because it reinforces that the lines of communication are open between the player and the franchise. Does that guarantee that an extension gets done? It does not, but it at least suggests they will continue to talk beyond this current restructure, and that the chance that Dak Prescott has a new deal in hand at some point before the start of the season very much remains in play, and that would help the Cowboys. Obviously, it would help Dak Prescott because he'd be even richer than he already is, but also help the Cowboys because even with this restructure earlier today, his salary cap hit is still over $55 million for 2024.
Damn. That's right. That's the first word that comes to mind every time you say that cap hit number, even though it's down a bit.
But you know, better than 60, I guess.
Right, right.
It's all relative.
Even though it's down a bit. But Field, you know, as much as Cowboy fans, you know, love to rip on Jerry and Steven, you know, in the front office for, you know, not making really hardly any moves in free agency outside of bringing in a veteran linebacker in Eric Hendricks and a gunner, right? I mean, it really has been somewhat stagnant. How much credit do they deserve for finding ways year in and year out, and you know this as well as anybody, to find a way to borrow from Peter to pay Paul in order to improve their cap situation, no matter how far over they are every single year?
Yeah, they find a way, that is for sure. And I think the reality for the salary cap is that there are constraints on it, but the best teams find ways to keep their best players. And that's what the Cowboys have done in many, many ways. Obviously, there have had to be some difficult decisions, cutting Zeke Elliott, letting Tyron Smith walk this past week, I guess it was. Everything is relative. So if that was more than a week ago, my apologies. But I'm pretty sure it was like Friday night when Tyron Smith agreed to terms with the New York Jets. So you're going to have some outward player movement, but at the end of the day, the Cowboys have continued to field a regular season winner. And the amazing part about the Cowboys is that the season does not start tomorrow, but if it did, and you stacked all rosters 1 to 32, and the criteria was simply to evaluate who had the best chance to win a lot of games this regular season, I would feel excellent about the Cowboys being one of the five or six best rosters in the entire NFL. But whether this is reductive or not, guys, I think the reality with the Cowboys, we can talk about contract restructures, we can talk about salary cap space, we can talk about Dak Prescott and the possibility of an extension. All that will matter is, no matter how good the business sense is by the Cowboys, is whether or not they win meaningful games in January and into February, because as we know, right now they are currently riding the longest streak in terms of consecutive postseason appearances without making it to even the championship game, much less the Super Bowl.
Yeah, all that matters is that when it comes to the Dallas Cowboys. Field Yates joining us here on Amber and Ian. So I don't want to talk about the Cowboys that aren't going to look that different next season. I want to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers, who at that quarterback position are going to look very different next season. Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, what do you make of that Pittsburgh quarterback room now, Field?
Yeah, so first of all, I thought it was very reasonable business done by Pittsburgh. I mean, minimum salary for Russ and probably the minimum you could pay for Justin Fields being a sixth-round pick a year out that can escalate to a fourth-round pick. The criteria needed for that to escalate to a fourth-round pick in 2025 is Justin Fields playing 51% of the snaps, which means one of two things. Russ is hurt, which means you got valuable insurance, or it means he just played better than Russ, and that means you made yourself a good deal. I am mindful of the reporting that there has been since yesterday or whenever the Justin Fields trade was. Again, forgive me for losing track of my days here. Have been multiple. Okay, there you go. Yeah, whenever it was. There have been multiple people that are reputable that have said, hey, my sources tell me Russell Wilson is the starter for this Pittsburgh franchise. That's fine and good and dandy to say on St. Patrick's Day. What matters is what happens in training camp, because if Justin Fields plays decidedly better than Russell Wilson in training camp, he's going to start. This franchise wants to win. They wanted a quarterback upgrade this offseason, and we know the Steelers are good enough to get to the playoffs. They want to get over the hump if they have now lost five straight playoff games. So whatever they say now in terms of public proclamations about the starting quarterback is fine and dandy, but we've seen countless times where a rookie quarterback is drafted with a veteran incumbent starter, and the team says, oh, the veteran is the quarterback one. This was Andy Dalton in Chicago a couple of years ago. We've seen it actually with multiple different quarterbacks in Chicago. A few years prior to that, Mike Glennon, and just amongst many, many, many different instances across all franchises. Ultimately, the best player is going to play, and if Justin Fields outplays Russell Wilson in August when that decision is actually made, Justin Fields will be the week one starter.
Look, I think he will be, because I think he's the better quarterback right now. Heck, I think he'd be a top 10 pick in this draft, and Russell would be a fifth or sixth round pick at this stage of their careers in this particular draft.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that. It's interesting. I hadn't thought about where they would land in the draft, but it's an interesting evaluation.
Is it really, though?
I mean, it's kind of an impossible evaluation. Russell Wilson's in his mid-30s,
yeah, but I'm
though.
At
so.
This stage in their career. But speaking of that 2021 draft, I'm more of a lurker on Twitter now, and you put something out, I think it was on Saturday, after the Fields draft, the trade was done. Go back and take a look, and this is how hard it is, ladies and gentlemen, to evaluate the most important position in sports. Go back to that 2021 draft class and take a gander. Field, what do you see?
So I say what probably stands out to me is, here's I think the headline, and I'll go to the subtext. So the headline is that four out of the five quarterbacks from the first 15 picks did not work out as planned. Zach Wilson hasn't been traded yet, but could be at some point. The Jets have given him permission to speak that, and people are going to say, wow, like, you know, is this really the is this reason enough to continue to draft quarterbacks going forward? Or should you just take players like Marvin Harrison Jr. in the draft early? I think that would be the low-hanging fruit conclusion to draw. As much as quarterbacks are very, very difficult to evaluate, and there is a margin for error that must be accounted for when taking one of them early, there is no greater roster advantage than a quarterback that can play. And I'm not saying a quarterback on a rookie contract. I'm saying a quarterback that can play. It sets up the rest of your roster. It gives you clarity. It gives you certainty. And I know that, you know, there are examples of quarterbacks that slid through the cracks that have become great players or highly paid players, Dak Prescott, Kirk Cousins, you name it. But go look at history and go look at the players that have started Super Bowls at quarterback, and the vast majority, the most likely path there is being a highly drafted player. And so my thought is, even with four out of those five quarterbacks just three drafts ago being, you know, flaming out with their respective teams that drafted them originally, my mindset is just keep swinging, because once you get one, that changes everything for your franchise, and it outweighs the whiffs that took place before you got there.
No doubt. Completely agree with you. And we were watching, by the way, you mentioned Marvin Harris. We were watching First Draft earlier today on ESPN2, which, by the way, I highly recommend it. He and Mel Kiper Jr. crush it. If you're a draft junkie like us, it's must watch and must listen on the First Draft podcast. You have Malik Nabers going sixth to the Giants. How close – what's the difference between Harrison out of Ohio State, Nabers out of LSU, and Roman Dunze out of Washington? How close are these three, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it's a two-man race at the top for that top wide receiver spot, that being Marvin Harrison Jr. and also Malik Nabers. And I get it. The public probably thinks this is one of those pre-draft stunts, right, which happens every year where you start to hear outrageous things. I don't think it's that at all. This is not just what I have seen, but also what I have heard. And preparing for this draft, there are a lot of people that really believe that Malik Nabers is nipping on the heels of Marvin Harrison Jr. Marvin Harrison Jr. is this big, powerful, smooth, gliding athlete who is exceptional and had terrible quarterback play this past year and still had 14 receiving touchdowns. Malik Nabers is this freakishly explosive wideout who did have great quarterback play this past year, but if you're looking for the best accelerator in the class, it's Malik Nabers. So truthfully, and you guys know this, but I don't think sort of the common football fan acknowledges this much, is that, you know, we make things always very much like one or the other, right? Is Marvin Harrison Jr. better than Malik Nabers? Where the truth is that there might be some teams that would say, hey, what we need right now on our offense is that big physical receiver that can bring to the table what Marvin Harrison does. And others might say, hey, we're looking for a guy who is ready to go like a Lamborghini in the open field. And that's where they would lean towards Malik Nabers. But to me, it's very, very close. Roma Dunze, not that far behind, but maybe one tick below those two.
NFL insider Field Yates, check out the First Draft podcast. Thanks, Field.
All right, guys, take care.
You're the best.
Amber and Ian's presented by Progressive Insurance, making it easy to save money when you bundle your auto policy. With home, condo, or renters, you'll earn a multi-policy discount. Easy to bundle, easy to save. Visit progressive.com. Coming up, that 2021 quarterback draft class that Field was just talking about, not looking so good right now. We'll get into that here on ESPN Radio.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Remember how excited we were back in 2021 about the quarterbacks in the NFL draft? Boy, did it feel like there was a lot of talent in that draft class. And boy, did quarterbacks go in the first round of that draft. And, well, maybe they shouldn't have. Ian, Amber and Ian, presented by Progressive. Ian Fitzsimmons, Amber Wilson, hanging out with you. I want to remind you, download the Tournament Challenge app, the ESPN Tournament Challenge app. That is the best and easiest place to go ahead and fill out a bracket, compete. You can even compete against us. We are in an ESPN Radio group. We will have an Amber and Ian group as well. So you can go ahead and compete directly against us with our brackets. So the Tournament Challenge app, or you can just go to ESPN.com. You'll see the link right there on the homepage if you want to participate in the madness. But the 2021 quarterback draft class kind of looks like madness all these years later, and not in a good way, Ian. The quarterbacks in the first round of that draft class, I will remind you, were the likes of Justin Fields, who we just saw get traded for a sixth rounder. Mac Jones, who was traded for a whole lot of nothing as well. Trey Lance, who prepares to enter year two as a backup for his second team. Zach Wilson, who's going to end up being a backup somewhere, and of course has an uncertain future in the NFL. These dudes were all first rounders. The only exception to that rule so far is Trevor Lawrence. And so it's easy to say that the rest of the first rounders aren't living up to expectations. I think I could even make an argument, Ian, that Trevor Lawrence isn't living up to the expectation that was set around him just because he was supposed to be, you know, generational, can't miss Caleb Williams style.
Yeah, I'm still a believer in Trevor Lawrence. When you get saddled with Urban Meyer in your first year, that's going to set you back a notch. And at least he's got a playoff win. I'm setting Trevor Lawrence aside as the only somewhat of a success story right now when it comes to, you know, that god-awful so far 2021 quarterback class in the moment. Trey Lance, yeah, done, right? I mean, Zach Wilson, ugh. Justin Fields and Mac Jones, I'm still holding out hope. Because what Bill Belichick did to Mac Jones was absolutely criminal. Saddling him in his second year with a defensive coordinator named Matt Patricia to call offensive plays after he was on an all-pro and helped the New England Patriots get to a playoff game as a rookie. So I think relocating, going home to Jacksonville, that's where he's from, and, you know, sitting for a year might be and just a restart. Kind of like Baker Mayfield, right? I could see Mac Jones because he's so smart.
You know, but Baker was playing, though, don't forget. Like, it went terribly in Carolina, and then it certainly went better in Los Angeles.
That's where he found his joy again. Yeah, but and he wasn't hurt in Cleveland. He was injured. There's a difference, right? So when he finally started having fun again, I mean, you told that story about Sean McVay going, dude, lower your shoulders, man. Just go have fun. Be you. And he was last year, and he helps the Bucs get to the playoffs. I think Mac Jones and especially Justin Fields, there's hope for them. It's still very young in their careers. Trey Lance, no idea. I mean, Zach Wilson, oh, my gosh. I mean, this 2021, and this shows you, Amber, how hard it is to hit on the most important position in sports. Because go to the year before, it's home run after home run.
Right.
I mean, it's Joe Burrow, it's Justin Herbert, right? It's Tua Tagovailoa, and it's now Jordan Love, it's Jalen Hurts. It's hit.
Yeah.
2021.
Those guys should have been drafted one through five if we're redoing that draft. And these guys should have been drafted, you know, seventh round if we're redoing this draft in 2021. Like, it's crazy. Now, some of those that you mentioned, like the Trey Lance situation and the Zach Wilson situation, I mean, I think that you could have made a strong argument at the time that they were a reach, right? At the time, people were saying that you should not move up to draft those guys or you should not be drafting those guys that high. So at the time, there was already problems. The lack of experience there from Zach Wilson coming into the league, it felt like a reach for the 49ers to trade up to get Trey Lance. There was a lot of questions about Trey Lance as well. So those two, I think, maybe not so shocking that they haven't worked out and probably why you don't feel good about them moving forward. I would imagine the reason you feel better about Justin Fields and Mac Jones is because you believed in them more back then anyways.
Yes.
So you felt more confident that they've ended up in the wrong situation, not that they were the wrong choice. And so we'll see that. I have a hard time with Mac Jones feeling like it's going to pan out differently, even though, yes, he had the rookie season that he had in New England and he was the alternate for the Pro Bowl and it was a pretty decent season and all of that. And I understand the way that New England handled things there. I just have a hard time believing that he's then going to get the opportunity, really. Now, he was beaming being in Jacksonville. Did you see how happy he was? I don't know if you saw when he was talking to the media.
But I can see it just because he went home. Yeah.
He went home.
He's got a real coach again.
Mom's there. Like, yeah, his friends are there. He's hanging out. He's got a real... Yeah, so maybe this is the perfect situation because he gets to be home again, and maybe that does give him that extra motivation and the extra juice. But the truth is, he's not going to play unless something happens to Trevor Lawrence. And when you don't get the opportunities and you don't get the reps, I just don't know if you're going to get that needed development that he hasn't seemed to do, that he hasn't seemed to have gotten here because he hasn't been developing the last couple of years since year one.
You know, I'll be honest, man. I really thought Bill O'Brien coming in was really going to get his career back on track. But there was no O-line. He had no weapons around him. I mean, you talk about, Sam Darnold back when he was with the Jets, seeing ghosts, being asked to run the Peyton Manning offense. Nobody can run that offense except for Peyton Manning. That set Sam Darnold back, even as a rookie. I thought that OB was going to be able to really get Mac Jones back on track. But when you really look at that roster, especially on the offensive side, you could have put freaking Terry Bradshaw wrapped into Roger Staubach and Troy Aikman and Joe Montana, along with Tom Brady, behind that O-line with those guys. And you're going, no, you got no shot. I mean, so I'm hoping that a reboot mentally can get Mac Jones back on track. I don't know. It's more, again, it's more hope than feel. But Justin Fields, in that 2021 class, going to Pittsburgh, I'm telling you, there is zero doubt in my mind he's going to be the starter this year, because Mike Tomlin does not care about draft status or if you've got a Super Bowl chip or not. The best player is going to play. And I think that's a home run for the Steelers and could be part of a saving grace for that 2021 quarterback draft class, because right now, you're right, it is. It's abysmal.
Yeah, I mean, Trevor Lawrence is the real saving grace, right? He just needs to turn out to be elite. We all, listen, he's solid, right? But the reason that I was criticizing even him is just because of the expectation that he came in with, which was sky high and maybe overdone and frankly, maybe entirely unreasonable.
I'm a big Trevor Lawrence believer.
But maybe he can. I mean, he's fine. He's fine. I'm not trying to take anything away from him. But, heck, we're doing it to Caleb Williams now. And the problem is when we set the bar that high, like, it's so just. Then anything short of that feels like a letdown, even if they end up being a solid quarterback, which is a little bit ridiculous. So I think Trevor Lawrence is the real savior there. But Justin Fields, I agree with you. That's where I agree. I don't so much agree Mac Jones is going to end up panning out as a starter. But I do think Justin Fields, with some of the promise that he's shown, the athleticism that he's shown, the way that we thought that position had changed into a position that is largely a running position. I mean, he's one of the best running quarterbacks in the league, easily. Yep. The talent there, yes, the accuracy isn't always backing it up, but the talent, the athleticism that we have seen with him already in the league when he was on a terrible team with nobody around him. So it'll be interesting to see what happens now in Pittsburgh. Coming up next, the coach of one team that's flying a little under the radar heading into March Madness, it probably shouldn't be, is next on ESPN Radio.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
James Madison Dukes are legit. They beat fourth-ranked Michigan State. They're led by juniors and seniors. Amber and Ian is presented to you by Progressive Insurance. Let's bring in the man most responsible for that success, JMU head coach Mark Byington, joining us. And coach, congratulations. I referenced that Michigan State game. How long ago, though, does that win feel now?
It seems like forever. I mean, college basketball is a long season, and when you're in it, you definitely feel it, the ups, the downs. I didn't want that to be our best win of the year and best moment of the year. And that was our first game. So I was like, I don't want everything to go down from this point. But we won 14 straight to start, and we were in the top 25 for 8 weeks. And we won a bunch in a row here at the end. So I'm glad that wasn't our peak. And I think it's the best is still in front of us.
How were you able to keep the guys grounded after such a remarkable win?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want them to feel extra pressure. They had to, like, defend it and be a team that, I knew everybody was going to come after us, but I didn't want our guys to feel anything extra than what they had to do coming up. And really, you can say that as coach speak, they're going to feel it. They felt pressure. I felt pressure. And
when you're in the top 25 and you've done all that, teams come after you, they're prepared for you. But what I think it did was we turned it in to say, hey, let's make sure we're better, we're sharper, we know this is what's going to happen on the other end. Let's make sure that we're doing the right things to keep getting better.
Mark Byington, head coach of the JMU Dukes, a 31-win team that I'm telling you, folks, keep an eye on them, that they could make a run. He hates me saying it, but he's here with us on ESPN Radio getting you ready for the madness of March. And if you can, from a personal standpoint, this journey you all have been on, what's it been like for you personally?
Well, I mean, when we won the Sun Belt Championship, truthfully, the first reaction I had was relief. And, you know, when you have a team that you believe is good enough and a championship team, that doesn't always mean at our level that means you're going to the NCAA tournament. A lot can happen. And so to go out throughout this season, I knew I had a team that was good. I loved coaching them. When we won the championship, it was a feeling of relief. And then, you know, a day or two later, kind of going on the journey, and I was like, all right, now it's time to have fun. Like, we've dealt with all that, and now the rewards, the NCAA tournament, and let's go. And we found our sights in Brooklyn. Let's go up to Brooklyn and have fun.
You know, and Coach, you mentioned that word relief, and it just struck a memory that I had, and it goes back years ago after Nick Saban, then head coach at Alabama, won his second national championship with the Crimson Tide. And when we were talking to him, I said, what was the first feeling you had? And he said the same word you just used. He said relief. And it wasn't rejoice until a few days after. The immediate emotion was relief. Why is that? Where does that come from?
Well, I think there's so much pressure, and we put it on ourselves too. It's outside and it's inside. And you know, for us to get to where we want to, you know, we're a one-bid league. And we were in a situation. We won 30 games after our semifinal game. And if we didn't win that championship game, we were going to be in the NIT. And we would have been the first 30-win team to ever not make the NCAA tournament. I didn't want that. And I didn't. Our guys didn't want that. So we were on a mission in the championship game, and we stayed in the moment. But as coaches, I mean, you put so much into it. It's like anything in your life. You put so much into a relationship. You care about something so much. And when you invest in it, you really want it to work out, you know, in a positive way. And sometimes it's the heartache and getting knocked down to get you to the point at some point in your life. But that's why I think you see a lot of coaches react that way.
What is your most satisfying thing about coaching hoop right now, especially with this group?
Yeah, it's going on a journey from the beginning to the end. And you're going through difficult times and great times. And this has been a fun bunch. And the places we've seen this year with this team. So we went to Italy this summer,
awesome.
And we're a foreign trip, Rome, Florence, and, you know, making pasta and all kinds of stuff. And then we went to a tournament over Thanksgiving in Cancun and won that tournament. And so we've been some cool places, but I think what's helped is we've had a lot of time to spend together in outside basketball circumstances, time to relax, you know, be tourists, enjoy things. And I think that bond's been great with me and them. And I think it's been great with them, with each other.
Before we get into your draw against the Badgers and your squad, I want to give a lot of your players, especially those upperclassmen that I referenced earlier, a lot of love. But now I got to ask you, Italy and Cancun, are you more of an Italian guy when it comes to grub, food, get filthy fat, or are you more, you know, Espanol, Hispanic, let's go get some, you know, some tacos and chimichangas and attack?
Well, so if I'm in Italy, that food is incredible. It's absolute best. When I'm in America, I am a huge Mexican fan of food, and it's probably myself and my son, it's multiple times a week. So when we were in Cancun, we actually didn't eat a lot of the local food and all that at the resort. But when I was in Italy, it was unbelievable. The red wine, the pasta. You can eat pizza over there every single day and lose weight. It's just something different.
That didn't happen to me. And I live in Dallas. I'm with you. I'm spoiled. But I came back filthy.
One pizza. You can't have multiple ones. One.
The best part is that nap they take over there, right? I mean, you know, folks, they lock down for like 2 hours for lunch and go nap. I need that in my life.
They do some great things over there. It was a cool place for our team, for me.
That's awesome.
I always tell them it's great to see where basketball can take you.
No doubt about it. All right, Coach, let's get into your squad here in this matchup. Mark Byington, head coach of the JMU Dukes, are going up against the Wisconsin Badgers, who ended up in the championship game losing in a hell of a game to the Fighting Illini of Illinois. As I mentioned, you got eight guys that go at least 20 minutes per. That's a big number. And then seven of those eight, if I'm not mistaken, are juniors and seniors. What does that mean to a coach, especially in this day and age, to have that upperclassman leadership and that many guys playing that many minutes?
Yeah, I mean, we're a deep team, and I feel comfortable going nine deep with my roster and getting those guys in to be productive. But you mentioned, I think, one of the key things in college basketball right now is you better be old. And you better look at your roster, and you better have juniors, seniors, grad guys, you know, that are significant players. Because the game is physical. It's no longer those 18, 19-year-old boys out there. If you look at the court, it's grown men out there. It's combative, and so we got to have bodies to match that. And if you look at our team, you know, we match size well, strength well with about any team in the country. And that's why I think we've been successful this year with the maturity of them and it's the physical makeup.
How have you kept so many guys in this NIL portal era to have that many upperclassmen that are true leaders for you?
Well, some of them we brought in late and, you know, and transfer on the other end.
Yeah.
And you know, we matched what they wanted to do, whether it was, you know, personally than as a team. And then we do have some unicorns in college right now. I got one guy I've coached for 4 years, and he's player of the year in the league, and Terrence Edwards. And
yep.
I have another guy, Julian Wooden, who's been here 5 years. He was actually here the year before I became the head coach, and he's been here. But if you listen to them, they talk about what a special place JMU is. They love it here. They're comfortable. They're happy. And then I think myself and my coaches, we try to make sure they know we care about them, care about their interests, and maybe they want to go somewhere else, but we want to make it hard on them. We want to make this a great place for them.
Edwards, Friedel, Wooden. I mean, go on down the list, man. You got some guys that care about the name on the front, not as much as the game on the back, which I think is also critical watching you guys play. Last one for you, Coach, and we appreciate your time here on ESPN Radio as the madness is finally here. How do you like your draw against Wisconsin?
Yeah, you're all excited, and then you know, you're Wisconsin. You know, you're seeing where you're going and everything else. And then I was up last night watching film, and they're really damn good. The point guard is terrific. They got a kid, A.J. Storr, who's a dynamic wing. Seven-footer on the inside, Stephen Kroll. Great coach, great system. We got a lot of work to do between now and then, but you know, our guys will compete. They're excited to play. We'll have a great week of practice, and we'll take our best shot.
You don't win 31 games in this day and age without being pretty damn good. And at JMU Dukes, they're pretty damn good. Can't wait to watch this matchup, Coach. Thank you so much for your time. And we'll talk to you maybe hopefully later this week or possibly early next week. Best of luck to you, men. Travel safe.
I hope so. Thank you, Ian.
It's our pleasure. Amber, they are good. I mean, really sneaky. I think you described it best going into that interview. Sneaky good. Mm-hmm. Don't sleep on JMU, folks. Because the difference between going nine deep with these guys is you have some teams that will go – I mean, you won't go around nine deep in college basketball, minimum. But you'll have a lot of teams that – and you know this as well as anybody, especially being a Gator. You'll have two or three guys that will go 30, 34 minutes. You know, and
right.
Then you'll have, you know, six or seven guys that'll play 20 minutes. But you have a few guys, two or three, that are getting logging heavy minutes. His eight, nine guys are all around 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all juniors and seniors.
Depth and experience.
That's a combo you want coming into the NCAA tournament, and they're hot.
Now, would you have picked these teams for upsets had the coaches not agreed to come on our show? Because I'm noticing a theme here. I'm just asking. Like, if he had...
These wagers were
he had
placed...
turned down the request.
Yeah, who said yes to the 88 requests that we put out?
Right.
You know, as I was...
That's where Ian Fitzsimmons puts his money.
As I was sending email after email yesterday, right, before Selection Sunday and after Championship Sunday. No, Samford was placed beforehand. JMU was placed beforehand. Texas Tech, I waited on the number, you know, just to see where the number moved. And it opened around 4.5, 5 on ESPN Bet. immediately jumped to 5.5. So a lot of sharp money came in on the Red Raiders, and that's when I jumped on Texas Tech. But I like the Samford Bulldogs plus the 8 against Kansas. I really like JMU in an outright win over a very good Wisconsin team. I mean, as he mentioned a couple of guys, Crowell, Storr, Hepburn, I mean, Wisconsin's good. They really are, but they're also coming off a big, disappointing, emotional loss in the Big Ten title game to Illinois. So that's part of it also. And this JMU bunch, they got a chip on their shoulder. They're playing with an edge and led by juniors and seniors.
I have Wisconsin in our tournament challenge, although now I don't feel great about it because when I have these conversations with you and then we have these coaches on and then I don't feel great about my picks. But in the tournament challenge, I have Wisconsin beating JMU, beating Duke, because that Wisconsin team is good. But we'll see. I know. It sounds crazy. It sounds crazy. That's another one of the upsets that I have. Again, on one of my three brackets that will turn into 30 brackets before Thursday, if you want to take that approach as well, download the ESPN Tournament Challenge app. It is that easy. Or you can go to ESPN.com. The link is right there on the homepage as well. And we'll have an Amber and Ian group, so you can play directly against us if you want to put your bracket into the Amber and Ian group. That is coming your way as well. Coming up next here on Amber and Ian, is it okay for schools to turn down invitations to the NIT tournament? Well, somebody doesn't think so. We'll get into that next year on ESPN Radio.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Music Monday. On Amber and Ian.
So when Rachel Robinson, our AP, is here on the board, she does a show within the show with her music selection choices as we come into segments. We're supposed to pay attention. Ian and I are really bad at that. There's always a theme. We're supposed to guess it. Rachel, I'm going to need you to go back through all the songs since we're so bad at keeping up.
No worries. That's what I'm here for. But I would like to remind the listeners that you almost got last week's theme. You were very close.
I think I got it.
It's like 75%. That's a D. Whatever. Well, I think that's passing. All right. So tonight.
Only counts in horseshoes, though, right, Amber?
That is what you said earlier.
Yeah, I was playing horseshoes with my son this weekend in North Carolina. That's from the Gram. That's a reference to the Gram is what they were just doing there. At Amber W Sports, if you're interested.
And at Ian Fitz.
And at Ian Fitz ESPN, although he doesn't run his Instagram. His daughters do.
Right. All right, so back to Music Monday. It's Ian Fitz ESPN. Ian, just so you're aware. Okay. All right, so we started off hot with Adele, Rolling in the Deep, One Direction, Makes You Beautiful, some Justin Bieber, Throwing It Back with Baby, Bob Marley, Three Little Birds, Shakira, Hips Don't Lie, and then coming in right there, The Rolling Stones, Satisfaction.
What?
Reminder, no guesses until the end
no
of the
guesses,
show.
No guesses, which is convenient because I ain't got one. So
I got no chance.
You guys can join into the game as well on social if you want to, and Rachel will be putting this out later, but goodness, I have no shot at this one tonight. So
Marley, Little Birds really threw me off. That was a curveball, like a I'm talking noon to six, drop off the face of the, and just off the end of the table, off the face of the earth. I got nothing.
So we'll get back to that.
She's so proud. Look at her right now. She's laughing. I mean, she's so proud of it. Now she's filing her nails. She's done. It's over.
So when are we doing the guesses? In like 20 minutes? 20 minutes from now, roughly?
Yeah, about 20 minutes, roughly. Okay. Give or take a lie or
all
two.
Right. 20
if
minutes to come
me
up
cheat,
with nothing.
You can send me a tweet at Ian Fitz ESPN.
I think that's how
me
Ian
too.
Got last week's.
At Amber W Sport. Listen, I almost got one, and that's good. I'm like good forever. I'm tapped out now. I almost got one.
I've gotten one in my entire time on this show. One. Yeah, and I celebrated like I won the damn Super Bowl.
Tom Crean is not celebrating. The former basketball coach was very critical of teams on ESPN's NIT selection special. Very critical on Sunday of teams opting not to participate in the NIT. Here is Tom Crean.
There's no question about it. I would want to coach. I would want to develop my team. You've got bigger staffs than you've ever had. There's plenty of time for the portal. There's plenty of time to talk to recruits. There's plenty of time to negotiate NIL deals. There's not plenty of time to play. There's not plenty of time to get your players on the floor and give them a chance to get better. There's not plenty of time for guys to continue to play that may never get to play again. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is absolutely ridiculous. It's each coach's choice. I get it. But if you take away a chance to play the games, to put your team on the floor, mm-hmm. let them opt out. All right, the bowl season has it all the time. Let it happen. Who cares? Give your players and coaches a chance to keep coaching and playing. Wow. And don't shortchange. If a guy doesn't want to play, go sit down. If a coach doesn't want to coach, go recruit. But there's got to be enough people to put 5, 6, 7 people on the floor and go play. Makes absolutely zero sense to me.
What do you make of all that, Ian? Because, of course, it was always a tradition. If you didn't make the NCAA tournament, you played in the NIT. And now that's not the case everywhere anymore.
I remember a time, and it was just, a year ago, where college football and college basketball coaches, especially in young programs, meaning if you had a first-year head coach in a new system, you know, you wanted the extra practice time. Even if you didn't make the NCAA tournament, you wanted to go to the NIT to get the extra practice time. You wanted to be able to, in college football, get that bowl game, even if you missed out on the Sugar or the Rose or the Orange, right, or one of the big ones, the Cotton, you know, the Fiesta. You still, if you got a bid to pick a bowl game, you know, I mean, it goes old school, the Blue Bonnet Bowl, for hell, mm-hmm. if I mean, for, you know, Pete's sakes. I mean, go ahead. People played. Why? Because you got extra practices to improve for next season. And now, as a portal, he heard Coach Crean mention the transfer portal. Well, that opened today. So, and then you have players now that go, well, you know what? Oh, we're not in the tournament? Pfft, hell with it. And some coaches put it to a vote now, Amber. I mean, I don't know what Porter Moser did at Oklahoma, for example. They are one of the teams that said, hey, we're out. And we got to know Porter Moser when he was at Loyola of Chicago. And, man, he's a man of character and integrity. And I can guarantee you Porter Moser wanted to go play. But some players just go, you know what, coach? We're not into it. But those days are obviously long gone now, because it's not about, you know, if you don't have a shot at the big tamale, then a lot of players just don't give a damn. Now it's about, I don't want to risk getting hurt, or I'm going to hit the portal and go elsewhere because we couldn't get it done here. A lot of guys now, I don't say a lot, there are a choice few that run from competition instead of running to competition, and that's a problem.
I don't know if it's just competition, though. I think that that's such an old school way of thinking. It's not just competition. It's a lot of work. And I do think that this is a different generation. Times have certainly changed. We know the attachment to these institutions is not what it once was before the transfer portal and before NIL. And that's just the reality of the situation. But I don't know. I never played sports, so I don't fully get the whole, you know, for the love of the game. From the outside looking in, sports has always looked like a whole lot of work. I mean, the whole reason I didn't play sports is because I was being raised by a single mom, and she worked full time, and she wasn't driving us to practices all over the place, right? I mean, it's just not a reality for a lot of people. And so I watched the hell out of them instead and loved watching them. But I always thought the kids that were so invested, that were having to go to swim practice at 4 a.m. before school started, or that was at practice until 10 o'clock at night for, you know, soccer and baseball and all these other sports, I always thought it looked like so much work on top of work. And I'm sure it's fun. But also, when you've been doing it your whole life and you're trying to get a college degree, and maybe you're looking at stuff and it's been a long season and you've worked your absolute tail off, I could kind of understand hitting a point where it's like, if this isn't for something, what I, in my mind, thought I was playing for, then I'm not motivated to keep doing it right now.
I'll tell you this much. There was a great quote. The hard is what makes it great. Jimmy Dugan once said that before he signed to baseball. He said, avoid the clap. It's good advice.
But the reality is most of these kids are not going pro. The reality is, so this is your chance to play if you do it for the love of the sport. But at the same time, the reality is putting your focus on something else like schoolwork is not necessarily terrible at that point. Coming up next, plenty more.